Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world, on the internet, by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Well, as I record these words, we're in the last couple of days before Christmas 2014, and here in the UK, the weather has declared a bit of a truce for us. Been very mild over the last couple of days, and at the moment it's about 10 or 11 degrees Celsius, which, depending on where you are in the world, is either very good or not very good at all. For us, that's almost springtime, so I like that. The weather forecasters are saying we may get some storms after Christmas, but all bets are off after that. Some people are saying we might have a big freeze, and some people are saying, it's going to be wet and mild and stormy like last year. We'll see. A few things to say, no shout-outs on this edition, because I've got some important things to say, and some of those are important to you, and some of those are important to me. Let's start with one that's important to me. The Unexplained may disappear for a couple of weeks quite soon. I'm still working out the details of this. There are a number of reasons for that. We've got a little bit of site maintenance and planning to do, and also something very personal to me, my own domestic conditions. There is a possibility I may have to move from where I am based, simply because I've been based in the same place for many, many years, and it urgently needs work. And that will have to be done, and probably I can't be at the place when that work is done. So, you know, life is change, and change is life, and I'm going to have to address that fairly quickly as we get into 2015. But I'll keep you posted. Please watch the website, and I'll put out an audio message and a message on the website if we make any changes and if the site is going to be down for a period or the show's going to be off air for a period. But I'll try and manage that. Also, it'll give me some time to book good quality guests as we go forward. We always have a range of guests here, which brings me to another point. There's been a lot of debate as we come to the end of this year about the kind of guests that we've had on here. Some of you have loved them and some of you have hated them. A lot of you telling me that I'm absolutely on the money for having a smorgasbord of people that make you think. Remember, you retain the right at all times, if you don't like a guest, turn the guest off and try another show. But I think, and that's the way that I conduct my listening experience, if you can call it that, when I listen to other people's podcasts or radio shows, I like to be informed and I like to learn things, even if I cannot bear the person that I'm listening to or the way they put themselves across. I try to listen, and I don't want to teach my grandmother to suck eggs here, but I try to listen because I might pick up something, or at least I might discover why I think they're so terrible or so wrong. So I can understand why some people say, oh, I didn't like this guest or I didn't like that guest. A lot of very good response, by the way, to the last show, Chase Kletsky. We'll have her back on, but a lot of you liked her a great deal. In fact, I've had no adverse comment about her. If you want to make some comment about the show, send me your thoughts about what we're doing here, some guest suggestions, whatever you want to do. Go to the website www.theunexplained.tv, the website designed and created by Adam Cornwell, my webmaster at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool, who's done such hard work over this year. That's how you can get in touch with me. There's a link on the website. Also, if you'd like to make a donation to the show as this year comes to an end, that will be gratefully received. Same place, www.theunexplained.tv. You know, we try to do our very best here, and I want to do some research into some of the guest suggestions that you've sent me and book some of these people. And some of the bigger names are not easy to get. You know, they think that they should not be appearing on podcasts. What they don't realize is this podcast is growing enormously and has over this year and has an audience bigger now around the world than many radio shows. The nature of the listening experience is changing. BBC Domestic Radio over here, Radio 4, only in this last week of 10 days ran a report about podcasting becoming the new broadcasting for some people. And I think it is. I think this form of communication is coming of age. Now, democratization's a good thing. In many ways, because it means that we bypass some large commercial organizations who, as I've bored you before with, do not always have your interests at heart. They have their interests at heart. That's good. As long as quality can be maintained, and I do believe that people who do things, especially things like this, ought to have some degree of training or grounding for that. So maybe in the future we need to have courses and that kind of thing. But that's another issue. We might address that in 2015. But I do think, although we shouldn't have a license to do this, because you can always turn off if you don't like it, you know, people need to have a certain basic level of competence to do these things. And that's not me saying that I'm great at what I do, because I certainly don't think that. Just that I've had a bit of training and a little bit of experience over the years. But hell, what do I know? something else to say to you, and this one comes straight from me right to you. Thank you very much for being there, for allowing this show into your life, whatever you're doing. The people who are driving trucks near Chicago, or jogging in Australia, or up near the North Pole, or based on a military base for the United States, out in the Pacific, wherever you are. I'm massively grateful and really thrilled that by doing something small like this, we appear to be having a big impact. And that, to me, is very heartwarming. Now, we've had a range of guests on this show over the years, but haven't done anybody sort of kind of spiritual for a while. So I thought I would address that now with a man called Ernesto Ortiz, who's got a pretty big profile in the United States. And you might call him New Age. I don't know what you'd call him. I'm going to ask him in a moment. But a lot of people over the years have mentioned to me this thing called the Akashic Record. And it's sort of an archive of all human experience, I think. But I've never really known what it is. Now, this man, Ernesto Ortiz, deals in that and can use it to your benefit, he says. We'll find out about that. He's in Miami, and we'll talk to him very soon on this final show of 2014. Coming soon here on The Unexplained, Richard Hoagland with an update on space. There's a lot to catch up on. We're organizing that now. And also an enormous big-name guest that I'm hoping to get during January. So watch this space. The booking has been made. We're just going to firm up a few details. But one of the very biggest names you could possibly get on a show of this kind, whether it's a radio show or online show, whatever it is. So that's that. Before we get to Ernesto Ortiz, from me to you, my sincerest and warmest good wishes for everything over this holiday period for you. You know that I'm superstitious and I don't say anything about the year to come, because I think if you do that, you offer a hostage to fortune. So let's meet it and greet it and see what it brings. But I once said a long time ago, this particular year, whatever it was back in the 80s, was going to be great. And it certainly wasn't. So I never make predictions about years. But let's just be strong and walk into that new frontier. We don't have a choice if you think about it. Time marches on. All right, let's get to Miami, Florida now. Ernesto Ortiz is our guest on The Unexplained. Ernesto, thank you very much for coming on.
It is my pleasure. Thank you, Howard, for having me on your show.
Now, some listeners have recommended you, and also I got a little note from a publisher of a book that you've got out at the moment, so that's why we're having this conversation. Now, I have to say, until that point, I'd never heard of you, so I've been doing some research about you and what you do. First off, you're in Miami, Florida, right?
That is home for me, yes.
Okay, and where is originally home? I'm detecting a bit of an accent there.
I was born in Mexico City.
Okay. And, you know, presumably anybody who wants to do big things has to move to the United States, yeah?
Well, not necessarily. Is that, you know, I have been living in the United States for over 40 years. So I moved here when I was quite young. So it was not like, okay, I'm going to move to the United States to do something big. That was never my intention. Just life just going to, you know, put me in California at the time. And, you know, that's where I was.
Right.
You know?
And as John Lennon once said, isn't it life is what happens when you're making plans?
That's right. That's right. You know, it's the same thing that, you know, if you want to tell God a good joke, you know, tell him your plans.
Yes. I think if I told him my plans, Ernesto, or the plans that I've had that haven't quite worked out, I think he would be laughing from now until next Christmas. But that's a whole other story.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
And how's the weather in Miami, Florida today?
It is delicious. You know, we have some of the best winters in the United States here in Miami, in South Florida. And that is the reason why so many people move, come from the northeast United States, as well as Canada. You know, we call them snowbirds.
Yeah, I've heard all about the snowbirds. Yes,
oh, yeah.
I've known some snowbirds in my time. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. They come here to get away from the cold and have these amazing winters, and they are really the most beautiful in the entire United States.
Yeah, it is surprising how you can transition from extreme cold this side of the world, and then you get off a plane in Miami, and the heat and sometimes the humidity really hits you, doesn't it?
Sometimes it does, yes. But, you know, humidity for me hydrates my body, and dry heat, like in other places around the world, it really, you know, dehydrates my body. So I do welcome the climate here in Miami, and I do travel a fair amount. I travel probably over 200 days out of the year, So when I am back in Miami, is I enter my own little nest. And it feels really, really good to be here.
Yeah, no, I've been to Miami a couple of times, and I also went to Puerto Rico, which is not a million miles away from where you are.
Very close.
During the winter time, I went to visit, I think I was interviewing this woman who lived in a house that had a courtyard that was part of the house. It was sort of open plan, and she had a garden that looked like it was inside the house. And it was so warm and so humid, it was possible to do that. It's something that we can't really envisage here in the UK. But
That is correct.
Rather you cannot. Lovely.
Okay. You accommodate.
Your work takes you around the world. You were in London recently. What were you here doing?
I was on my way, actually, to Bali. Every year I have an Akashic Record intensive, that is all three levels of the Akashic Records in one short amount of time. This is over a 2-week period. So, you know, I was on my way to Bali. I stopped in London, visited with some really good friends, and then I was not on my way to Bali. I had just come back to Bali, and I was on my way to France, where I spend the month of November teaching the Akashic Records as well.
So this is information people want to get. Now, a lot of my listeners over the years have emailed me and said, you want to really discuss the Akashic Records. It's terribly important to mankind. And I, at the beginning, I started thinking, well, maybe this is sort of new agey stuff, and I don't want to go there with this show, and I'm not convinced at all. But more and more people have been emailing me, and that's the reason that I've got you on here. I think we need to explain for people what the Akashic Record or records, it's records, isn't it? What they are. Are they the... I began to think of them, but you're going to tell me I'm completely wrong, I'm sure. I began to think of them as a complete archive of human experience. Is that so?
It is that and more, Howard. It's really far more than that. The Akashic Records are present everywhere. It's nothing new that has surfaced in the planet just recently. They are mentioned in all major religions from around the world for thousands of years ago. And for most of us that live in countries like the UK and the US, we are familiar with the Holy Bible. And the Bible mentions the Akashic Records as the book of life. For Jews, for example, is the book of remembrance, as well as for many other religions, they have specific names for the Akashic Records, which they are is the recording of your soul's evolution, the progress of your souls from the time of your souls of our soul's inception to this present moment. So there's hundreds of lifetimes in there that of this recorded history. So what they are is past and present and the possibility of the unfoldment of future events. The word Akasha is a Sanskrit word that means primary or primordial substance. As primordial substance, there is a soul factory. That soul factory would be Akasha, from where souls are being produced.
So there's a kind of factory. It's rather like, let's not be trivial about this, but it's like Ford's in Detroit, turning out fresh souls all the time, or recycled souls. And each of those souls has like the documents that a car comes with that tells you about the car. Same with souls.
Yes, you know, we do come with some pre-programmed standard equipment from that soul factory, just as much as there are nebulas that produce stars. You know, we can go to NASA's site, and the Hubble telescope has photographs of beautiful nebulas that are giving birth to a star. So imagine a nebula, a system that is Akasha, that is also giving birth to souls instead of stars. And once that soul is born, then we begin the process of taking human embodiments, and the energy that we put out, the words that we put out, the actions that we have throughout our lifetime, in lifetimes in this case, they are being recorded in your book of life. They're being recorded in Akasha. So when we have the means to fine-tune our senses and be able to tap into this energy, we can with the assistance of the record keepers, the masters and keepers of the Akashic Records, we can look at our book of life, and then we can dialogue with them to be able to correct any mistakes, anything that we have done in previous lives or present life. So what the Akashic Records are, or what I call them, is the Library of Congress of the Soul. Here in the United States, we have the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. Now, this particular library has over 650 miles, you're thinking kilometers, about 600 kilometers or whatever it is, of shelf space, with over 242 million items, 32 million books in 470 languages. It has been said that in 2015, there's going to be 7.9 zettabytes, which is the equivalent of 18 million times more than the paper publications that they have. Now, if you think about this, it's mind-boggling. Now, the Akashic Records are that and far more than that. They contain every imprint of every emotion, of every action that has been generated by humans. And we, the Akashic Records, have the collective memory, not only of individual souls, but also collective memory of soul groups, such as family karmic patterns, and we get re-embodied in the same family again and again until we learn the lessons, clear the karma, as well as cultural karma, karmic conditions. And you see this very much in the Middle East today, or in countries where there is this group dynamic that is just being carried from, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years to the present.
So are you saying that as I go on my journey, and I do believe that life is a journey, and sometimes it's a rough one and sometimes it's a happy one.
Yep.
The mistakes that I've made, and I undoubtedly have made more than my fair of mistakes in this life, yep, they are correctable, but I have to keep repeating the pattern that I'm in and the group of people that are around me until they are corrected. Have I got that right, or have I got that wrong?
No, you got it right. You know, it's in a way, it is correctable. I mean, the energetic imprint is what needs to be corrected. The event already took place. The actions have already taken place. So that is already stamped in your energetic memory of your soul's evolution.
So when you said that you could go back and correct this record and make it right, it kind of reminds me of radio stations that I worked at in the days when every radio station, I'm sure it's the same in America, had to keep a tape log of what they broadcast for about 3 months. And I have to say, and this is a long gone era, and people don't do this and can't do this anymore because of digital technology, but back in the day, I knew some people who maybe had said something wrong on the air or made a mistake or something like that, and I have known people, not very many, who've, as they call it, edited the logger, taken a piece out of the logging tape. This is 20 years or so ago, you know, or more, to remove the mistake. You're saying that we can go to the Akashic Records, like the logging tape, and make a change?
Yes, absolutely. Imagine Akasha as a very, very dense field that exists all over the universe. It is in your room right now. It is in the streets in London, Miami, New York, Mumbai, everywhere. It's also outside of our planetary, or of our planet. It's between the sun and the moon, between the stars. It is the glue that holds the universe together. So this substance, and what I am saying right now, is something that we have known in the metaphysical field for hundreds of years. And the beauty of this, of our times, is that what I just said is now being validated by science. And many times that is exactly what we need or want, is to have the scientific validation to create, to be able to create a new belief system.
Okay, well, that sounds good, Ernesto, but how is science validating that?
Well, there was a symposium last March in Milan, Italy. It was called the New Symposium of Science and its applications in physics, medicine, and consciousness research. And what they found out, the scientists found out, is that there is something that they call the zero-point energy field. Now, this is a field that the seers, saints, mystics, sages have long maintained that exists as the interconnected cosmic field that is at the root of all reality and conveys information, a field known as Akasha. Now, this scientist also, or quantum scientist, recently discovered a new area of time and space called the quantum vacuum. Now, this is a super dense cosmic frictionless medium that carries light and all the universal forces of nature. Now, the quantum vacuum essentially generates the holographic field that is the memory of the universe. Now, in this quantum field consists of a subtle sea of fluctuating energies, which are measurable, which appear or are in all things: atoms, galaxies, stars, planets, living beings, and even consciousness. So this zero-point Akashic field is not only the original source of all things that arise in time and space, but it's also the constant and the enduring memory, like a library, of this whole universe.
So are you trying to tell me that science, for once in its life, is about to sing from the same hymn sheet as spirituality?
Absolutely. But Howard, is nothing new. It's for the past 10 or 15 years, science is beginning to validate all of these. Such as a few years ago, I subscribed to a magazine called Scientific America. I love science because that validates in many ways my spiritual experience. And about 3 years ago, I read an article in which they talked about black matter. Now, black matter, you have heard of black matter.
You mean dark matter, yeah?
Dark matter. Yeah, right. Dark matter, black matter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's a substance that exists all over the universe, but no one really knows what makes it. So in 1952, the U.S. government created a laboratory to study black matter, or dense dark matter, call it whatever, right? And what they just recently, 3 years ago, revealed is that they are beginning to have the validation, maybe they have more than that, that black matter or dark matter is produced by human emotion. Now, that to me is just a beautiful, mind-boggling validation of something that we know as the energy that we put out is what goes to create the collective unconscious, the antikarana of the earth, from where everything arises, you know, thoughts, emotions that get bounced back. Now, this energy, now with this validation from the quantum field, I can relate it directly to the field of Akasha, which is this dense cosmic field that is everywhere. And if you fine-tune your energies, it's palpable. You can actually feel it. You can tap into it. And that is the cosmic field that we tap into when we enter into the Akashic Records to retrieve information about ourselves.
And are you the only one who's making this connection between dark matter and the Akashic field?
I don't know if I am or I'm not. You know, to be quite honest with you, I am not a scientist. Mm-hmm. I am a spiritual teacher. And what I do know is that I receive information. I receive just that information, teachings from the Akashic Lords that I apply and use into my life. I am not afraid of putting it out there, even though I don't have scientific validation. I've been called crazy. Great. I love to be crazy because only crazy people can transform the world.
Well, you sound very balanced to me. I've heard crazy people in my time. You sound very balanced about it. You say that you receive information, though. I think that is where some of my listeners' eyebrows are going to start to raise. Explain that to me.
Well, we have the Akashic field being a library such as the one I just explained, you know, the Library of Congress of the Soul. What that means is that we have received a sacred prayer. And this sacred prayer, the words within the prayer are encoded in sacred geometry. They are alive. They're vibrantly alive. when we say this prayer with the right formula and an open heart, then we are fine-tuning our senses. We're fine-tuning our energy, our vibration, to plug in or to connect with this field of Akasha. When we do that, it's as if the doors of a library open right before our eyes.
So you're saying that a form of words that you somehow received can open the door to these records, and you can make changes to those records and make life better?
Yes. Now, I did not receive the prayer. You know, I learned a prayer about 20 years ago and 21 years ago, and I have been using this prayer, which is the prayer that I teach in my classes and my retreats and workshops. And that is what gives anyone, you, anyone that is listening, as long as you have an open heart, as long as you come with an open, with a beginner's mind. And that's what I ask people when they come to my workshops. I said, please come with a beginner's mind. The expert mind is going to block you. And everybody has knowledge. We have accumulated knowledge. Maybe that knowledge has turned into wisdom. And that can is directly linked to the alter ego or to the ego that is saying, oh, I have heard that before. You know, nothing new. That type of arrogant attitude, that immediately blocks you. But if you come with a beginner's mind, a mind that is open and receptive, if you come with an open heart and you learn the formula, you learn the system of the Akashic Records, I guarantee that anyone, because I've been teaching this for 17 years, I guarantee that you can tap into this field of Akasha. When you do that, you can then go to this Library of Congress of the Soul and dialogue with the record keepers, with the masters that keep your book of life. And then you can enter your book of life and dialogue with the masters about anything at all that is a reoccurring pattern in your life. Maybe you are having trouble with your finances all the time. Maybe you have trouble maintaining a healthy relationship. Maybe you are always angry. Maybe you are a very judgmental individual. Maybe you are someone that has an addiction to gambling, sex, alcohol, cigarettes, who knows what. And what is the origin of that? Maybe you have gone to psychotherapy and you have tried to heal it, but nothing really works. Why not? And the answer is because you need to go back to the moment in which you created that imprint, when the seed origin of that was created in your life. Now, if it's in this life, it could be a belief system that was inherited by you from your family. When we're babies, little boys and girls, we have no other option but to receive what our family dynamics have around us. Now, if we grew up in an unhealthy environment, that is going to show up in our lives as we start getting older and lower, older and lower, older. Now, are these patterns serving you? Are these points of reference that you have created, that our belief systems are serving you in your life?
But some people listening to this would say that is socialization. That's what happens to kids when they're born and brought up in a family group. And it's nothing to do with any external influence.
No. Every family, everywhere in the world, basing their cultural beliefs, it has nothing to do with politics. It has to do with belief systems. If your family has healthy, clean, beautiful spiritual belief systems, well, that's what you grow up with. But if your family has nasty belief systems, if your father or mother were drunks, if they were always struggle with money, and they were you experienced fights in your home, that has nothing to do with politics or anything like that. That has to do with
What I was saying is, I wasn't saying it was socialism. I was saying it was socialization, the way that we teach a child how to interact with the world. And you can teach a child in a healthy way that serves it and allows it to develop into a healthy and prosperous adult, or you can distort the child's views of the world and give them problems down the track. And that's something that is a social process, is nothing to do with something from outside. But you're saying it is something to do with something external.
Well, it has to do with, you know, with belief systems that come down your pipeline. You know, it come down from your parents, your great-grandparents, your great-grandparents, great-great-great-grandparents from both sides of the family. So belief system based on culture, based on time in the world, based on struggle or lack of struggle in the family, and all of that creates beliefs creates imprints that are handed down, passed down from generation to generation. And the question is, at some point when we become, in my case, when I was a very young teenager, I start questioning the values of my family. And even though I was born in a very well-to-do, lots of money family in that type of environment, I questioned all of these values. And for me, it was, the answer was no. These values don't serve me, don't serve what I feel deep in my heart is the path that I want to follow. I want to follow more the path of spiritual life instead of the material life that my parents were showing me. So then we have choices. And the choices is start working on the belief systems that we inherit to get rid of the belief systems that don't support the life that we want to live, and then replace them for the healthy belief systems. Now, that is going to root cause when we do that type of exploration. So sometimes we not only have to explore our formative years during this lifetime, but we have to go to a previous life if the imprint is that strong and is coming from the past.
And you told me that 20 years ago you inherited a prayer or a form of words that would allow people to access the record, make the changes, live a better life. How did you get those words, that form of words? Who gave that to you?
Well, I was invited by a friend of mine back in those days to attend a workshop on the Akashic Records, how to read your own Akashic Records. And so when she invited me to do this, I was very excited, but I was teaching that same weekend, so I could not attend. Now, I did know about the Akashic Records because I have read the biography and the life of Edgar Cayce, here in the United States, a fantastic psychic. I also read about Nostradamus, Alice Bailey, and others that have used the Akashic Records as the means of getting information from this field and put it into practice or action in their lives. So a few months later, Denise offered to open my own Akashic Records. She did. I feel that I was enveloped in this field of pure love. About a year later is when she started teaching, and I took my first class with her and learned the Akashic Record prayer from her. Now, then after a while, I'd made a direct connection or contact with the woman that was the matriarch of the holder of the Akashic Record prayer as it was given to us back in the 1930s or 40s. And these were received by a man in Mexico City from a Spanish descent. And the prayer was given originally in Mayan. Then the prayer was translated from Mayan to Spanish, to English, and now to many other languages. And that is the way in which I received the prayer.
Well, that's fascinating. So this goes back to Mayan times, and it is well recorded and well documented that they were a very special people who could do things and knew things that we can't explain today. So if it came from that direction, that's very interesting.
But it also comes from the Egyptian direction, because there is a temple. Thoth is the record keeper for Egyptians. And there is a flower of life engraved, carved in one of the stones at one of the temples in Egypt. The flower of life is the Merkaba. The flower of life is also related to the Akashic Records as a vehicle of light that allows us to travel between dimensional realities. So the prayer was given to us by the Mayans, but the point that I'm trying to make is that just as for Indians in India, the Nadi leaves are the recordings of the soul's progression from beginning to this moment. So they are mentioned in many different religions, but the way in which we receive the prayer was through the Mayan tradition.
That is fascinating, Ernesto. A lot of people in this world of ours are living dysfunctional lives. They're under stress. They don't like the lives they're leading, and they want to make a change. And it's difficult to make change in life. If you want to do it on a sort of conscious level, then you've got to change the way that you think, got to try and think positively. And, you know, I can tell you that's really hard at times. A lot of people are searching for a quick fix.
Sorry to interrupt you.
That's cool.
But that is right there a belief system. If you believe it's hard,
okay,
it's hard. If you change that belief system, mm-hmm. which is a belief system, because maybe you heard that life is hard when you were growing up. And here you are, a 5, 6, 7 year old boy, you know, and what you heard in the family is, oh my God, it's so hard. I am working, you know, 2 jobs, not enough money to pay the rent. Mm. You know, we have 4 or 5 kids, not enough money to feed them. Life is hard.
Okay, so you inherit that. I completely understand and I take on board what you're saying. Now, I don't like to talk about myself as an example, but I've got to use myself because it's the only example I've got for this. I was brought up in a very loving home, and I was brought up to believe, even though they were humble beginnings, my parents didn't have a huge amount of money. I was brought up in Liverpool, just an ordinary kid. I was, well, what was inculcated within me was the belief that I could do anything that I wanted to do. So I didn't have negativity built in. So when I said to you, life is hard, it wasn't my parents or my early formative years that taught me that. It was living life and getting beyond 20, 25, 30 that taught me that life is hard.
Absolutely. Now, life is, you know, in Buddhism, there is the word samsara. And I use that in my book a number of times. Samsara means this cycle of pain and suffering between life and death, between life and rebirth. So we are in this world of samsara, world of pain and suffering. So you're absolutely right. But even then, we have the greatest gift that we can possibly have, and that is free will. So with free will, we can choose at some point in our lives to learn the tools to start minimizing little by little to the point of having hardly any pain and suffering in our lives by, in this case, we're talking about the Akashic Record, so I will stay with that. By using the Akashic Record energy, the dialogue, the relationship that we can create with the Masters to look at every single aspect of our life and begin changing it to the point that you can get to truly create a new belief system that life is not hard.
Well, that sounds really nice. Now,
it is.
Just going
it
back
is.
To the point that I was making a couple of minutes back, because people live lives that are dysfunctional and there's a lot of stress, and we know what goes on in this world these days. Some of it's not nice at all, and sometimes I do worry for the state of the world and where we're going with it.
Yep.
But that's going to unfold, I'm sure, in due course. People are looking for a quick fix, whether they're doing it through spirituality, and some people are doing it through drugs and various nefarious means. They want a quick fix. So how do you know that people who come to you are just not looking for a quick fix to make everything right in their miserable lives?
I shape them up.
Shape them up?
I beat them out of the head.
How does that work?
You know, people come with an agenda to my classes. And when people come into my classes, one of the first questions that I ask is, how many of you are here to grow? Now, if I ask that question, you're part of the circle of 20 or 30 people that are attending my class, would you raise your hand? Most likely you would. I'm going to say that 99.9% of the people raise their hand. So when they give me their answer, I say, well, wow, that is really too bad, because you are in the wrong place.
Really? Why are they in the wrong place?
Because everything grows. Everything grows with the collective consciousness of growth, the divine spark that is giving life the ability to grow. So we are 20, 30 minutes older right now than when we first started the conversation. We have grown unconsciously. Here we are. Plants grow, fish grow, trees grow. Everything grows, you know, unconsciously or with this spark of collective consciousness that makes everything grow. However, if you are here taking my class to reinvent yourself, then you are in the right place. Why? Because through the guidance, in the Akashic Records, I teach 3 very specific aspects. I call them the view, meditation, and action. When you learn the Akashic Record prayer, when you learn the system, when you allow me to guide you through this process to discover your beauty, your magnificence, to get healed in every aspect, to end to the point of being free, then you can reinvent yourself. So when you learn these techniques and you open your Akashic Records, you begin to look at your life as if your life is a theatrical play. You are the main actor, but you're also the director. So in the view, you learn how to step away from yourself and to be truly the observer, the witness of your own life.
Well, that's interesting. You know, when people have, and this is a bit tangential to what we're talking about, but when people have these so-called near-death experiences and they see things unfolding before them, are they accessing this record in that state?
Well, let me finish with what I was saying before, because, you know, and I will answer this for you. But what happens is, since we are the director of the play as well as the main actor, we can, from the witness point of view, look at our lives, and we are holding the script. Now, as adults, we are holding the script and we are rewriting on this script an old pattern, belief system that came from childhood to the present moment. Or if we look at the life that we are, or the pattern that we have created as a drama, and maybe you're tired of living this drama, you have the right, because you hold the script, to change this play to be maybe a romantic comedy. And the Akashic Records gives you the means to be the witness, to observe your life, the segments of your life, in the way that you're living it. And if you don't like it, change it. It's really that simple. Now, sacrifices need to be made. Maybe you have to fire people, some of the actors in this play, the ones that don't want to change their role and they want to continue having a drama around your life. You can fire them. No one says that you have to keep toxic people around you. Because what you do is, you're going to create a vacuum, and based on the new direction that you want your life to take, then the conditions and circumstances will appear for you to have the right people in your life that are going to support this new you.
I love the sound of this. Haven't psychiatrists been doing this kind of stuff for years?
Well, why haven't they done it? I don't know. I don't know, but I do have a fair amount of psychotherapists mainly, and a few psychiatrists that have come to my classes.
Really?
I have had neurosurgeons that come to my classes that open their Akashic Records to start opening your, you know, the brain or the spinal cord, and to do surgery with the guidance of the masters. Wow, you know, I mean, it's just powerful. So we can change our lives by being able to truly be the witness of them. Now, I have died twice in this lifetime. I have drowned it twice. And this is slightly different, because when you die in this lifetime, you go through the tunnel, and almost every past near-death experience that I have read or know about has the same or very similar components. Now, that you go through a tunnel and gets to a point in which you hear a voice or you see the image that gives you a choice to either completely check out or come back.
Sorry to interrupt. Are you saying, Ernesto, that you had drowning accidents a couple of times and you almost perished in those, and you had the near-death experience classically?
Twice, yes.
Twice? Okay. Yes. This is fascinating. Tell me. Tell me more.
That the one time when I was, about 12 years old, more or less, and the second time when I was 17, both times it had water. Both times it happened in the ocean. So I drowned it, basically, and I was pulled out of the ocean by the same man. You know, I recognize him, and this same man, which is an angel, has come into my life on another occasion, two other occasions, to tell me that whatever it is that I'm doing is exactly what God, the divine, the great spirit, call it whatever you want to call it, wants me to do, and to stay focused in what I'm doing and not to change the direction of my life.
So just so we're very, very clear about this, because it's very, very important. You're saying that you had these near-death experiences, during which, or at the end of which, you were helped by some kind of angelic presence that helped you on your way and helped you to find your path?
Well, not really. Yes and no. I saw myself navigating or floating in this white golden tunnel of light. And I was just in the experience of that. at some point, in my case, a voice start dialoguing with me. And the dialogue, or during the dialogue, this voice, masculine voice in this case, asked me if I was ready to continue, that I was at the point of no return, that I could just continue and experience the complete death experience, or to come back.
You hear this, don't you, from some of the written records of people who say that they've had near-death experiences, that they're given the choice of going back to the life that they had, or, you know, to going on with the story, or they can go forward and die and perhaps face rebirth or whatever comes next.
Correct. And when I made the choice, I said, no, I want to live. At that precise moment, I regained consciousness of my body. And what I saw is bubbles coming out of my mouth or my nose that were going up, and I'm going the opposite direction, going down. So then I'm realizing, and I tried to swim or whatever, but I can't. I just simply, my body does not function. So I realized that I am drowning. And when I have that realization, a physical man, not an angelic being.
Okay, because you described him as an angel. I'm sorry. So you mean somebody who was there to help?
Someone, but it's the same man, the same face, the same man has appeared four times in my life without changing.
And do you know who is he?
Well, he told me his name is Frank, you know. So frankly, I don't know who he is, but
this is fascinating. Ernest, was this in the same place? Or these four appearances of Frank, were they in the same place? How could you connect with somebody that you hadn't known presumably before the first time you encountered Frank? Oh, you come across Frank four times. You have a guardian angel.
I do. Everybody does. I have three spirit guides and I have my guardian angels. Yes, everybody does. You just have to have a relationship with them, create one. In this case, the first time I drowned it, he pulled me out of the ocean, gave me mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. And by the time my family were running and other people, because I was there lying on the sand, this guy was walking away. He was about a block away.
Amazing. You know? And you're absolutely certain that there was no hallucination involved there. I mean, for it to happen once, you maybe could say 100%. That, but four times is a lot of times, isn't it, to hallucinate?
Yes. That's a lot of hallucination.
Okay, so that explains an awful lot to me about the path that you're on now. Now, we mustn't lose this point of accessing these Akashic records by saying a prayer that gives you access to them, and then you're somehow issued with spiritual Tippex in a way, so you can edit the record, you can, you know, do a little bit of digital video editing, or if you're a typist from the old days, you can put a bit of Tippex and get rid of some of the bits that aren't very good. I mean, that's a marvelous thought for a lot of people.
But it takes time. It's not a quick fix.
Well, I'm sure it sounds like a very complicated, on one level, a very easy thing, but on another level, an incredibly complex thing.
It's not that complicated. It just takes time. You know, we just ended a cycle, a cosmic cycle predicted by the Mayans December 21st, 2012. Okay. This cycle was a cycle of 26,000 years, which is the time that takes the Earth to go around the Milky Way.
And this is what some people interpreted as the end of the world, isn't it?
Right, which was no end of the world, just an end of a cycle. Mm. When there is an end of a cycle, another one begins. So we are at the beginning, 2 years into another cycle of 26,000 years. So the Earth is now rotating around the Milky Way. I mean, it's just basic, simple astronomy. But what happens here is now, not astronomy, is if you believe, which I do, in reincarnation, the question is, how many lifetimes have you lived in the past 26,000 years? And if you're here again and you have all the problems, if you have not achieved complete and total enlightenment, then most likely you will come back again and again for another however many lifetimes. So the consciousness in the way that we can manage our life today, getting rid of fears, learning the language of love, dropping our attention to our hearts, see other people, not for individuals that are nasty and whatever, but see them as individuals that are wounded, that require, that need our love, that require and need our compassion, you know, our understanding. If we start changing the relationship that we have with life itself, from the way that we're living it to a more conscious way of embracing and bringing love as a primary quality or primordial quality of life itself, then through the records, we can start looking at the karmic conditions that we have created as this life being the sum total of all of them, and then start paying our dues, taking the time that is required to dialogue with the masters to get to the original cause, to that seed moment of the inception of the thing that you are dealing with in this life. And there's many, many, many fears, many, many things, and take the time to start clearing them. The more you balance this in the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, then I guarantee, I promise you that you will start living the life of your dreams. And for many people, what that would be is to simply be free of emotional pain, emotional garbage.
Now, many great people over the years, like Mahatma Gandhi, but many great men over the years and great women, have told us that the end of all things is good. So there is suffering in this world and there are dictators, but dictators fall in their time. And in my experience, bad people usually do get their comeuppance, but you've got to wait possibly longer than is practical to see it happen. But it does happen. The Chinese said, if you stay by the river long enough, you'll see the bodies of your enemies float by. Those things, I do believe, are so. But if you're teaching people to go to this record that is the seedbed of all things and make changes, aren't you destabilizing the way of all things?
Not at all. Not at all. I am simply bringing consciousness, light, and love to the minds of people that are open and receptive to receive.
Do you have any examples of people's lives in this practical world, your practical world of the United States of America, the most commercially conscious place on earth, maybe? Well, I think some places in the Far East are catching up very fast with that. But be that as it may, what sort of practical differences have people made to their lives by coming to you, being told this prayer, and then accessing these records and making edits to the records? How have they changed their lives?
Oof. I mean, I can give you probably dozens of stories. There are countless.
Okay, so there are examples of people you say have been helped. Now, I must be sounding to you like a terrible cynic, and I'm really not. I'm fascinated by the idea that we can access something that can make practical changes to our lives, because everybody's looking for that kind of thing, Ernesto. And presumably in the United States where you work, we know what the US is like. It is, as we said, a very busy and a very focused kind of place. Sometimes people don't get the kind of success that they are looking for. And your society, as much as our society here in the United Kingdom, is driven by success. If you don't succeed, you are seen by society to have a problem. So you must get people coming along to you saying, Ernesto, is there something that you can do for me? Can you?
Well, I don't do anything for people. They have to do it themselves. The only thing that I do is give you the tools. You know, if I give you the fish, then you're going to eat it and you don't know how to fish. But if I give you the tools, mm-hmm. if I give you the hook and show you how to do it, then you can feed yourself, feed your family, and feed the village, you know, if you learn to make the hooks yourself. So what I do is I have the wisdom and I just simply want to empower you. I want to give you the tools. I want to show you how, because this is a long process. This is a system that people should be using it in their lives every single day, you know, whenever, to be able to have direction, healing, to have, you know, a better way of decision-making in that in goal-oriented, success-oriented societies that you're talking about. If we can live our life driven by success, but humble drive, not an egocentric type of drive towards success.
And maybe you come to realize, and many people that I've known have come to realize this, and to tell you the truth, I have too, that the way that I was measuring success and those people I was talking to you about have measured success is maybe not where it's at. And being successful is something different from just kind of getting up the career ladder and, you know, being famous and well-known and all the rest of it. And, you know, I see those things, and I know others who see this as well. I see those things as imposters now, and they're just not important to me. But that's a process that life taught me. I didn't have to access anything beyond myself. Or maybe I was actually doing it, but I didn't know I was. What do you think?
Well, I think that if, you know, I think that everyone that is interested in a spiritual life, I don't know you, Howard. I don't know if you follow a spiritual life or not. I mean, I'm going to assume.
Okay, well, look, I have an interest in spirituality, Ernesto, which is why we're talking. My listeners suggested that I talk to you, and that's why we're talking. So I'm very interested in that. I believe that if you behave towards people as you would like them to behave towards you, then life will probably be a little better for you. But that's not going to stop you having bad experiences. That's about the limit of my belief system.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. You know, any belief system is better than no belief system at all. You know, here basically. To comment is that everyone has moments of opportunity in this lifetime, and we have arrived at a critical time in our lives in which we are receiving or we have an explosion of interest in spiritualism. People are tired of the materialism and the consumerism and the, you know, race to success that we are talking about. And how about getting to the point of being able to be just as successful, but in meditation? How about being just as successful, but in kindness, in compassion, in tolerance towards others? When we start changing the drive for success from the material to the spiritual, life will start changing. And no, you don't have to. What we're talking about is just basic human kindness. You don't have to connect to the Akashic Records at all in order to deliver this type of energy to the world. The Akashic Records are different. However, the Akashic Records being a part of everything there is, every action that we have towards others, good or bad, is going to be an imprint onto this field of Akasha. So it is non-Akashic record related in a direct way, but it is as well.
But what happens, Ernesto, if you're a... I mustn't lose this point. I've just thought of this, so excuse me for interrupting. What happens if you're a person who's done bad things? Maybe you've encountered some people like that, and they come to you and they want a form of absolution, but they're not sure how to do it. Maybe they can't go to a church and ask for absolution. Perhaps it's just too bad. And they think that by accessing the Akashic Records and editing them, they can absolve themselves from the bad things they've done. It surely can't work that way.
Well, like I mentioned before, this is the same answer to a question similar to this one from before, is really doesn't make any difference how many times you have fallen, how many times you have sinned, how many times you've done bad actions. We have all done that. I certainly have done that. You mentioned that, you know, earlier in this interview. I have fallen 1,000 times. And I have gotten up 1,000 times, but now I have the guidance of the masters in order to really find a direction that I'm looking for that is going to get me to more into my own space of inner peace. When we can use a system that can, with kindness and love and compassion, show us the reasons why we created those negative bad actions.
Okay, Ernesto, so very important that we describe this process of you learn this prayer. How do you access the record? Do you go into a trance and see a book? How does that work?
No, we don't do that. The energy filters, the light language, the language of spirit, filters down into our seventh chakra. And when it enters our body, so to speak, then we use our senses. So if we're auditory, we'll be able to hear. If we're visual will be able to see. If we are more sensory, then we're going to be able to see, to feel. So the key is to start fine-tuning all of our senses so we can start deciphering the information as it enters. So each of us is going to receive the information slightly different.
And as we conclude this conversation, and thank you for giving me this time, and I hope you don't think the questions I've asked you've been too hard. I've just been trying to understand, and sometimes understanding things is a painful process. Describe to me in a few words the changes that have happened in your life since you discovered all of this. How much better a person do you feel you are now?
About 17, 18 years ago, Hurricane Andrew came through Miami. And it completely wiped me out. I lost my three businesses. I lost my home. 3 months before that, I was burglarized, and I was, I lost a lot of money based on the business that I had at the time. So I was living in my car, first time ever. You know.
Wow, that's hard. That is hard.
It is hard, and the only light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, was the Akashic Records, the prayer, and the conversations, the guidance that I was receiving from the masters. I have rebuilt my life from having absolutely nothing like that, living in my car, to be living right now the life of my dreams. And the life of my dreams is travel the world. I travel the world to photograph. That was my major in college. I love to photograph. I just have a photo exhibit here in Miami a couple of weeks ago. I love to teach. It's one of my greatest passions, to give information, share tools with people that can help them to open their hearts, to understand more about themselves. I love to plant the seeds of enlightenment in the minds of people, the seeds of potential. And that is what I do. I love to love. And I love my life. I'm deeply grateful to have the guidance and the direction that I receive from the masters to be able to map out my life and to follow the direction to be a more loving, a better person in all aspects, to be a good father for my children, to always be the example of love and kindness, to be able to have learned how to be free of physical pain, even though after a severe accident that happened to me last April, in which I almost lost my life, but I only ended up with a severely broken leg and have had zero, and I mean zero pain from the moment of that accident to this very moment right now. I mean, I can just continue going on and on, but to me, the Akashic Records are really the crystal ball that I use in my life to be able to look at what is that I need in order to have a loving, fulfilled life and to create a positive impact in the life of others.
Well, you sound very much at peace with yourself and your place in this world, Ernesto, and, you can't knock that. Very briefly, I will get emails from people who like me to talk more about hard science on this show. And, I always say that we have to embrace some spirituality here because that's how we learn. For those people who say, I've just heard an hour of New Age mumbo jumbo, which some of these people email me and say, what would your words to them be?
I have compassion. I have love. I have acceptance. Every one of us is exactly where they want to be. If the people that are questioning, criticizing, etc., what is the level of emotional pain that they're experiencing in their lives? Where are they financially, emotionally? Are they emanating and radiating love, kindness, tolerance, and beauty to the world? If the answer is yes, wonderful. I bow to them. Just as much as I bow to someone that follows a spiritual life, that follows the Akashic Records, that follows meditation, and they have the same identical results, I bow to them. We need more people like that. We need more acceptance in the world because every one of us is contributing, if we're doing it with consciousness, to the betterment, to reduce the amount of darkness that is in the world. Just look at what is happening in the UK. I mean, not in the UK, but to many UK citizens with this ISIS group in Syria. All of that is impacting ourselves. What are you doing to to impact the world in a better way. Now, in a scientific way, in a way of non-belief, in whichever way it is, makes absolutely zero difference to me. If you are doing something positive to help one another, to emanate and radiate more love, more kindness, and more compassion, then we are on the same boat. Call me mumble jumble. I am dreaming my life of my dreams. That is exactly what I do in my daily life. And I just wish everyone to be happy.
That is the best answer to a question like that that I've asked over the years that I've heard, Ernesto, and I thank you for it. In other words, as you say in the United States, it's different strokes for different folks.
As it is indeed.
If people want to read more about you, Ernesto, where do they go?
Well, they can go to my website. It's journeytotheheart.com. It's quite simple. I think it's easy to remember, journeytotheheart.com. And I think that that everybody is on a journey, and that journey is really to their hearts, even though so many people don't really know that that is what they are doing.
That's a nice point to leave this conversation, and I send you my good thoughts for 2015, Ernesto. Thank you.
Likewise. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Well, there you heard the thoughts of Ernesto Ortiz. I will put a link to him and his work on my website, which is www.theunexplained.tv, www.theunexplained.tv. Thank you very much for supporting me and for supporting this show. As I said at the top of the show, got some great guests coming as we head into 2015. Lots of big plans for this show. Thank you to Adam Cornwell, my webmaster at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool, for his hard work over the year, and Martin for the theme tune. And you, wherever you are, for listening and for telling people about the show. Happy New Year and a Merry Christmas. From me, Howard Hughes, here in London at the home of The Unexplained, stay safe, stay calm, and please stay in touch. Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.